Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassam. This discourse that we chanted this evening, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the turning of the wheel of law, is a teaching we understand that was given by the Buddha just 2 months after his awakening. So that's like 2 months ago we had the Visakha Puja. And here we are 2 months later. There was the occasion where the Buddha gave his first formal discourse to, we understand, the five bhikkhus that he had previously been practicing with, when known as the Panchavagi bhikkhus. And the Buddha, having realized complete unshakable freedom from suffering, and was motivated to share his understanding, and considered, when he looked at them, considered that these previous companions, who he knew had been practicing very diligently for a long period of time, were ready for the teaching. And it's significant that the Buddha did consider them ready, and that they did benefit because they were ready. And I'd like to consider this a little bit this evening for a particular reason, that sometimes when we approach the Buddha's teachings and we like to think that we're ready for the highest teachings, we like to think that we're capable of taking on the highest practices, and only to realize that actually that was a little bit naive. And so it is with the Buddha's teachings on, which is what the Dhammacakka Sutta is about, the Four Noble Truths. This is actually the highest teachings. Sometimes maybe students learn about it in school, or you read about it in books, the Four Noble Truths. Oh yeah, Four Noble Truths, yeah, that's the Buddha's teaching. As if it's just a bit of theory. Actually, what the Buddha was talking about, the Four Noble Truths, is a profound transmutation of consciousness, so that suffering is seen through. So there's no body actually suffering anymore. It's a transmutation. It's not just an intellectual argument that is being placed, and you agree with it or disagree with it. It's an explicit pointing to a transformation, a transmutation, because it's not just a temporary alteration of consciousness the Buddha was interested in, but a transmutation, where that example that I've often quoted before, carbon dust becoming diamonds. Diamonds don't just become carbon dust again. The element is transmuted from one form into another. And this is what the Buddha realized, the transmutation of consciousness into something that it could no longer suffer again. There was no suffering possible for a being who had had these insights into the Four Noble Truths. So it's wise to approach them with a serious degree of caution and humility, and not assume, although we might get the theory, and it's a great theory, I think it's the ultimate great theory that's ever been uttered, in the Four Noble Truths. And there is preparation to be done. If we're not ready, then we're not going to get the message. And there's a classic story in the scriptures of where the Buddha, using his superior insight, was able to perceive a particular person in a particular village was ready to understand the teachings, and so he traveled to that village to see this man and was ready to give the teachings. And however, when he arrived there, he found out that this fellow had been working in the fields all day long and was tired and was hungry, and so he didn't teach him the Four Noble Truths straight away. Rather, he saw to it that this fellow was fed, so that his basic needs were met. He was made ready. And then he did hear the teachings, and he did realize and did benefit. So when we are reciting the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or we're reading about the Four Noble Truths in contemplating the Four Noble Truths and the profundity of the Four Noble Truths and the relevance of the Four Noble Truths, let's also bear in mind and bear in heart and recognize that there's a lot of preparation that needs to be done if we want to arrive at insights into the Four Noble Truths. Often I've spoken about the Mahamangala Sutta, the Discourse on Great Auspiciousness, because I think it's an impressive encapsulation of the path of practice and from the beginning to the end. And notice that at the very end, well, it's actually the third to last stanza, Arya Sachana Dasanang, Nibbana Satchakirya Cha Etang Mangalamutamang, this insight into the Four Noble Truths, realization of Nibbana, complete cessation of suffering. This is the greatest blessings. And then the second to last verse, he goes on to talk about how amazing it is and how unshakable it is and how totally soulless and griefless that state is. And just, but up until that point, it's preparation. And I would encourage anybody who is interested in studying and practicing the Buddha's teachings to really study this discourse. And every single stanza in there, every single stanza is rich with relevance. And there's one I've been reflecting on recently, Gara wo cha niwa toja sandu ti jakatanyuta kale na dhamma savanang etang mangramutamang. It's about halfway through, or maybe a little bit more than halfway through the discourse. And again, the Buddha's talking, this is the greatest blessing. What is he referring to? Garawo cha niwa toja sandu ti jagatanyata. Garawo, what is that? It's respect. It's respectfulness. The Buddha's holding up respectfulness as a quality that if you want to understand the Four Noble Truths, if you want to live a life that's truly auspicious, then respectfulness is to be cultivated. Perhaps it's useful to understand that this discourse was given when a deva fluttered down from the upper realms to ask the Buddha for what are the most auspicious signs, and probably was looking for something along the lines of, you know, which is the most favorable astrological configuration to be born under, or which crystals you should have under your pillow. And the Buddha, obviously, that wasn't his thing. What he pointed to was how you can cultivate your spiritual faculties and then work on developing these virtues. These are the forces that bring about the transmutation, bring about the transformation. And these virtues, without these forces having been rightly cultivated, then we might admire the Arya Sachana Dasanang, we might admire insight into the Four Noble Truths and praise people who've realized them. However, what's needed before we're going to go in that direction is to develop these virtues. And so in this stanza, Gara Wacha Niwa Tocha Sandu Ti Jagatanyuta, starting off there with Gara, respect. Respectfulness, what does it mean? Being able to show respect and feel respect for others, it's probably safe to say that we're not really capable of really feeling and showing true respect to somebody else if we don't really respect ourselves. Respectfulness, the ability to feel respect, what is it really? And how much self-respect do we have? And if we don't have self-respect, why? What? So that's a good question to ask if we're interested in cultivating respectfulness. Are we sufficiently imbued with self-respect? Do we really respect ourselves? It's my observation that most people don't really, truly, genuinely respect themselves a great deal. And then we ought to be asking why, if it's such an important virtue and the Buddha held it up as such. Why do we not truly respect ourselves, really, if we're honest? Well, I would think it's probably to do with our having made choices or performed actions by body, speech and mind, that if we saw somebody else performing those actions, we wouldn't respect them. And this is where the cultivation comes down to having to be really honest with ourselves, not just having nice ideas about what is good and wholesome and what is not good and unwholesome, rather coming into our own bodies, into our own hearts, and reflecting on, if I don't have enough self-respect and the capacity for genuinely expressing respect for others, what's getting in the way? What actions have we performed? And as I say, by body, speech and mind, it doesn't have to be that we're snorting coke and lying on our tax forms to lose self-respect. It can also be speech, and even more deeply and perhaps more difficult to discern, mental activity, the stories that we tell ourselves. These stories that are there on loop, going around and around and around. There's a degree of intention there. We may not necessarily see it, and some of it's been going on for so long that it's quite difficult to discern. So I think this is worth looking into, the intentional actions of body, speech and mind, that if we saw somebody else doing them, we wouldn't consider them as truly worthy of respect. And if we're caught up in that, well then there's the cause. And once we see it, well then there's something we can do about it. We're motivated. If we're just thinking about it, then maybe we're not really genuinely motivated to change it. However, if we dare to come down into our hearts and our bodies and feel how we feel about the disrespectful behavior, like the self-criticism, like how unkind we can be to ourselves when we make mistakes, criticizing ourselves really tyrannically, criticizing ourselves, is that beautiful? Is that kind? Is that worthy of respect? To see that helps, to really see that we behave in ways that are not truly worthy of respect, and then we're motivated to change. So gara wocha, niwa tocha, niwa tocha, humility. What is humility? Well, it's a word, it's a nice word, it's virtuous, it's a great thing. What's next? Well, that wasn't why the Buddha mentioned it, just to pass over it. It was actually, this is something to really spend time looking into. Like this one line of this one stanza of this discourse is something that warrants a major amount of investigation. And humility, what do we think it is? What do we feel it is? And if we see it in somebody, we respect it, we like it. Genuine humility, not false humility. The absence of humility, arrogance, we obviously don't like that. That's not beautiful. And if we see genuine humility, even if we don't have a concept of what it is, we appreciate it. And so one way of cultivating humility might be to reflect on our limited ability. So perhaps not necessarily obvious, it might feel like that's going to take us in the direction of self-loathing or something. Rather, here we're just talking about being honest. It's like acknowledging that we've got limitations when we've got limitations. It takes humility to own up to our limitations, to really own up to them, to indulge, like in the Dhammacakka Sutta we were chanting just now, the Buddha talked about the two extremes, indulging in pleasure and the other one indulging in pain. So atakilamatana yoga, that's like getting lost in self-disparagement and loathing ourselves and, yeah, I'm so limited, I'm a hopeless case. That's definitely not what the Buddha was talking about. That atakilamatana yoga, that's a dead end, that's a dead loss, that's a big mistake. When he was talking about the middle way, it was between these two, indulgence in pleasure and indulgence in pain. And So reflecting on our limitations skillfully, owning up to the fact that we're limited increasingly quickly. Right? And sometimes when we start to do this, it might be the case that, you know, a day or so later after we've done something unsuitable, we realize, oops, oh, that actually, that was my fault. That wasn't very good. That wasn't suitable. Or maybe it's years later, or months later, or weeks later, or hours later. You know, what's good, what's helpful, what's suitable in cultivation is to get quicker at owning up to it. So, all right, that wasn't suitable, that's not suitable. Genuinely acknowledging our limitations sooner rather than later. And the interest, the real willingness and interest to do something about it. Not just say, oh, sorry about that, and then, okay, let's go and eat something or crack some jokes, rather. What can I do about it? You know, if we make a mistake, and whether it's something that was fully consciously intentional or just a bad habit, if it was something that was not honourable, wasn't truly virtuous, then to admit that and then to see, are we willing, are we keen, do we actually want to do something about it? Karawocha niwatocha santuti chakatanyuta. So the next one is contentment. What is contentment? Well, we all know discontentment, we all know restlessness, we all know agitation. What is contentment, really? What is contentment? You see that sign that's on the wall or standing in a frame at the entrance to Kusala House. It says, contentment is not the goal, contentment is the way. And so what that's pointing to is that we don't believe in the story of I will be contented when I get what I want. Rather, we see if we can make an effort that means that we can actually be contented with what is. To really be contented, which means letting go of our demanding that things be otherwise. If we're not demanding that things be otherwise, that's called contentment. What is discontentment? It's requiring, demanding that things be otherwise. What is contentment? It's seeing how demanding that things be otherwise actually is a cause for suffering, a cause for limitation. Of course, for obstruction. So respectfulness, humility, contentment, and gratitude. What is gratitude? Remembering these are not just concepts, these are forces, these virtues. The word virtue is not necessarily used very much these days, at least not in the positive way. People talk about virtue signaling, which is usually in the pejorative. And virtues are generally better understood as forces that contribute to this process of transmutation and that support us in practice. What is the virtue of gratitude, and how do we cultivate gratitude? And being able to really appreciate, for instance, the goodness of our lives. To reflect on, for instance, something like the good fortune we had in our upbringing. It's with our critical faculties. I know my own critical faculties, which are seriously developed. I can think about my upbringing and come up with all sorts of reasons why it fell short of how it ideally should have been. And I regret to say that I have been quite dismissive and disrespectful and ungrateful to my parents. However, without my parents, an enormous amount of self-sacrifice on their part, enormous sacrifice. My father spending the summer growing food, growing vegetables, growing fruit, and my mother bottling it and preserving it for the winter so we have this healthy food all year round, and sewing our clothes for us. So the reading from the Bible in the evening and taking us to church on Sundays is not necessarily a spiritual practice that I'm in support of. At least it was an attempt to instill virtues. They really made an attempt to instill virtues so that this possibility, this being that was growing up in their care, wasn't going to fall into ways of heedlessness. And that's beautiful. That took a huge amount of effort. I know my parents struggled enormously. They weren't particularly wealthy, but they were very, very generous. Generous towards us, generous towards others. And so just to stop and think about that and see, feel, if that doesn't give rise to gratitude. All the teachings that we receive, like if you look at the world that we live in, and so many people, so well educated, with so much money, so many opportunities, and so unhappy. What's going on there? It seems like they haven't received teachings which point them in a direction that really makes a difference. In many cases, they bought into the consumerism con, the idea that if you have more stuff, more experiences, more holidays, better car, better internet connection, whatever, then you're going to be happy. And so there's a lot of people who have all of these things who tragically, really tragically, are desperately unhappy, and many of them are on medication to cope with the unhappiness. Whereas if you hear the Buddha's teachings on how to engage the potentials we have as human beings to develop our spiritual faculties, faith, energy, embodied mindfulness, collectedness, discernment, cultivating our spiritual abilities, and then applying those, bringing these to life's experience, like the upheavals that there are around in the world now. Many people are wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth and screaming at the television and saying it shouldn't be this way, and that obviously doesn't help. What makes a difference is if there's understanding. And so to think we have these teachings from the Buddha that points out what's the real cause of suffering, where do all these wars come from, all this injustice, all this unfairness, where does it all come from? It comes from misperception, not seeing that which causes well-being, that which causes suffering, not understanding the true cause of suffering. So, having received these teachings from the Buddha and realizing that, wow, what would my life be like? I can think back, and what would my life be like if I hadn't heard these teachings, if I hadn't been given that book when I was at university, and was it 1969 or 70 or something, and or I hadn't been persuaded to go on my first meditation retreat, and or I hadn't gone to Thailand and met the great teachers that I met there, what would my life have been like? Well, just reflecting like that readily gives rise to a sense of gratitude. So cultivating gratitude. And then the last in that stanza there, the last one, Kalena Dhamma Savanam, timely hearing of Dhamma, timely listening to Dhamma, is a virtue to be cultivated. That doesn't mean just going on YouTube and looking at somebody who's giving an interesting talk and listening to it and then forgetting about it. To be really listening to Dhamma talks means that we need the skill of being sensitive inwardly. Again, probably most of us know what it's like to have a noisy head in our meditation, the endless chatter that's going on in our head, praise and blame and complaining and congratulating and proliferating and extrapolating and speculating and apparently endlessly noisy heads. And including if you're listening to a Dhamma talk, what's he saying that for? I don't agree with that. Oh, he could say more about that. Or why doesn't he say this? Oh, that's amazing. That's wonderful that he said that. Or she's really giving a great Dhamma talk. How can I find more of her Dhamma talks? Is that really listening? Is that listening? Is that timely listening to Dhamma? So the capacity for listening is something to be cultivated. And as I've again said many times before, I encourage people to exercise imagining that your ears are in the middle of your chest, like visualize. It's a bit weird, I admit. Imagine that your ears are in the middle of your chest. In other words, listening from the heart, not just listening from the head, because our head is so full of ideas, and we're so, most of us, conditioned to be identified as that activity, the concepts, that we're not sensing what's happening deeper down. So, kālena dhamma savanam etang mangalamutamam. Once again, this consideration of the preparation that is called for, if we're interested in what the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the turning of the wheel of law, the Buddha's first discourse, if we're interested in what it was really about, let's have the modesty and to check to see how ready we are. And those Panchavagyi monks, and they've been practicing for years, enormous effort, commitment, renunciation. And the Buddha judged them as ready, and so he gave them that highest teaching. For the rest of us, he gave teachings about how to prepare ourselves. Thank you very much this evening for your attention.